into light. Even in his panic, he clung to the misty trail. He made only one misstep, but that was sufficient. The storm broke over the Barrowland. It was the most furious in living memory. The lightning clashed with the ferocity of heavenly armies, hammers and spears and swords of fire smiting earth and sky. The downpour was incessant and impenetrable. One mighty bolt struck the Barrowland. Earth and shrubbery flew 100 yards into the air. The earth staggered. The Eternal Guard scrambled to arms, terrified, sure the old evil had broken its chains. On the Barrowland, 2 large shapes, one four-footed, one bipedal, formed in the afterglow of the lightning strike. In a moment, both raced along a twisting path, leaving no mark upon water or mud. They passed the bounds of the Barrowland, fled toward the forest. No one saw them. When the guard reached the Barrowland, carrying weapons and lanterns and fear like vast loads of lead, the storm had waned. The lightning had ceased its boisterous brawl. The rain had fallen off to normal. Colonel Sweet and his men spent hours roaming the bounds of the Barrowland. No one found a thing. The Eternal Guard returned to its compound, cursing the gods and weather. On the second floor of Corby's house, Corby's body continued to breathe, one breath each 5 minutes. His heart barely turned over. He would be a long time dying without his spirit. Chapter 21. The Plain of Fear. I asked to see Darling and got an immediate audience. She expected me to come in raising hell about ill-advised military actions by outfits that could not afford losses. She expected lessons in the importance of maintaining cadres and forces in being. I surprised her by coming with neither. Here she was, primed to weather the worst, to get it over so she could get back to business, and I disappointed her. Instead, I took her the letters from Orr, which I had shared with no one yet. She expressed curiosity. I signed, "Read them." It took a while. The lieutenant ducked in and out, growing more impatient each time. She finished, looked at me. "Well," she signed. "That comes from the core of the documents I'm missing. Along with a few other things, that story is what I've been hunting. Soulcatcher gave me to believe that the weapon we want is hidden inside this story."
"It is not complete."
"No, but does it not give you pause?"
"You have no idea who the writer is?"
"No, and no way to find out, short of looking him up, or her. Actually, I had a couple of suspicions, but each seemed more unlikely than the other."
"These have come with swift regularity," Darling observed. "After all this time."
That made me suspect she shared one of my suspicions, that all this time. "The couriers believe they were forwarded over a more spread period."
"It is interesting, but not yet useful. We must await more."
"It will not hurt to consider what it means. The end part of the last there. That is beyond me. I have to work on that. It may be critical, unless it is meant to baffle someone who intercepts the fragment." She shuffled out the last sheet, stared at it. A sudden light illuminated her face.
"It is the finger speech, Croker," she said.